Okay, so thank you guys so much for all the ways that you serve at Restoration Church, and in particular, thank you for the important work that you're doing serving in Restoration Kids and teaching our kids about Jesus, and thank you for being here early on a busy Sunday morning. So I do just want to jump right in, go over a couple things that we want to get done today. So I'm going to go over some basics. There are a few of you who've been serving for years, and there are a few of you who are just excited to get started. And we haven't had a training in a really long time. So I do want to just go over a few Restoration Kids basics, make sure we all are all on the same page in terms of what is the goal, what's the vision, you know, what are we really doing here. And then I'll go over a few policy changes that we've made recently. And then I'll turn it over to Andy and Paige, who are going to walk us through just some tips and tricks to classroom management and ways to keep the kiddos engaged, because sometimes those things can be a little tricky. So, just starting with, what is the goal of Restoration Kids? Who knows? Who read their policy document and can tell me? So, you know the mission of Restoration Church is to make disciples that delight in the supremacy of Christ in Washington, D.C. and beyond. And so, Restoration Kids' goal and mission flows straight from that. Exactly what these two said, to make disciples and a safe environment. And so when kids are entrusted to our care, we want to make sure they're learning about Jesus, they're learning about the Bible, they're learning about what it looks like to live out their faith, or what it looks like to live out faith. But we also want to make sure that it's our priority to keep them safe while they're with us. So that's how I'm going to split up my 2 points this morning. I'm going to talk about the curriculum that we use, which will help us discuss the discipleship-making part of our goal. And then I'm going to talk about the Restoration Kids policy document, which can help us talk about the safety parts. So with the curriculum, we use the gospel story, or the gospel story Bible and curriculum. And so that curriculum has the same goal that we do, to make disciples. And it's to teach kids about Jesus Christ by showing them the entire story of his redeeming grace. So it goes through the entire Bible, our survey of the entire Bible, in 156 lessons, actually. So that's half from the Old Testament and half from the New Testament. And so I know sometimes it can be kind of random. You come one Sunday morning, and you're teaching on, like, Ananias and Sapphira, and you're like, why are we teaching this lesson? And it's all, you know, part of this survey from the Old Testament to the New Testament. And so it repeats every 3 years. So the goal is, if your child has been with us, we use this curriculum from age 3 all the way up to 5th grade. So if your child has been with us from age 3 to that time, then they'll have had a survey of the Bible 3 times in their times here at Restoration Kids. And so that's really important to see that it is kind of a comprehensive approach, and hopefully it helps you think through your part in this vision that even if you're not in the classroom every Sunday morning, someone is always in here, and the seeds are being planted, and the gospel is always being preached, and it's going through the survey of the Bible over 3 years. Something else to note is that it cycles every 3 years, so that means every single time they're adding more material, the lessons are a little different, the object activities are a little different, and so it's meeting the kids at their level. It strives to always be an age-appropriate lesson. So hopefully it can still stay fun and engaging, and that's something that Paige is going to talk to us a little bit about as well. But something else that I did not know before I started working here is that these devotionals also, this curriculum also comes with family devotionals, and all of our families have these. And so that is really helpful in letting them connect what they've learned on Sunday throughout the week. They can talk about it as a family. And again, since everybody, all of the kids are in the same, they're going over the same lesson in the different classes, they're able to talk together as a family. The kids can learn from each other. So it's a really neat aspect of the curriculum that helps make disciples, not only on Sunday mornings, but also throughout the week. And so I asked a couple parents, and yes, okay, great. Just in time, Cynthia. So just to encourage us, because I know sometimes it can feel like, as I said, kind of random what we're doing in Restoration Kids, I asked just a couple parents to give us a little snippet on something that their kiddos have learned during Restoration Kids. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Cynthia. I keep asking my kids what they're learning, and I think they obviously they say that they learn about the Bible stories, about specific stories, and people who believe in God and people who don't believe in God. You know, so they're learning that there's people are just what happens when you believe in God, that things are different, and also they like being with their friends. So I think that's an important thing that we build this community together, and when they get to know each other through the different, just spending time together. I think when I've been teaching, when they do the drawing, the coloring afterwards, it kind of just helps to see how they interpret what they're learning, which is sometimes very random, but sometimes very profound. So it's good. Kyle, do you also want to?
Yeah, so I think one couple things in the learning I think would be that Christians are loving. I think teaching is definitely helpful. We can teach them at home as well, and the same things they're teaching here, but we can't teach them is that the church is loving, and we can't give them those at home. And so whether it's in you guys in the basic or here, you guys develop relationships with our kids. I think that's a big important part for God. And one thing to note is just if the kids here are good at answering science answers, that doesn't mean that we touch that anyways. I think I really appreciate you guys being winsome with them and you're defending our kids. And exactly that's the deal of us.
So I'm sure you could ask any parent this question of what have their kids been learning in Restoration Kids, and they would have something to say, but I just wanted to ask a couple to encourage us, and then we can talk with more parents after if they have anything else that they want to share. But so I just wanted to share that part, just so that you guys, you know, when you are discouraged, you might feel like the kids aren't being, or I'm not really sure if they're getting what I'm saying, that gospel is always being preached, and God, through His Word, can grow the seeds as He sees fit. And I think that our curriculum does a really great job of laying the groundwork for us to be able to help the kids see the survey of the Bible several times while they're kids. And one other important thing about the curriculum is, so Brandy Golden chose this curriculum, and part of the reason she did that, this particular one, apart from its comprehensive approach, is that it has all the lessons for you. It has everything written out. I get all the object lesson supplies for you, so it hopefully sets you up for success, but there are two things that you need to do to prepare. So who are the veterans around here who can tell me what those two things are?
Read and pray over the lesson.
Exactly.
Days.
Exactly. So read over the lesson, familiarize yourself with the lesson, and again, Katie's going to talk a little bit about that. And also, don't forget to pray. It's really important to be praying about your teaching, the other people who are teaching that week, the service, the kids' hearts, all those kinds of things. That's also a really important part of the prep. So that is the discipling part of the goal. So we use the curriculum, but of course it's just curriculum. We need fantastic teachers like you guys to be able to share it with the kids. So that is the discipleship making part of the Restoration Kids goal. And then the safety part of the goal is, I'm going to talk a little bit about some changes that we've had to the Restoration Kids policy document. And so I sent you all in the mail a copy, and I also sent you a copy in your email. So hopefully you've had a chance to look over it. If you haven't, please be sure to read it through before the next time that you serve, just so you're aware of some of these basics, but also a few of the changes that have been made in the past couple months. So this is a little bit more of the drier part of the training, but it's just a few reminders, and then I'm going to hand it over to Andy. So one of the changes we've made recently is that we ask parents not to come into the classroom, and we're doing this for a couple reasons. One is that we've ensured the parents who are leaving their kids with us that the volunteers have all had background checks. And so if there are parents that are in the room who have not had a background check, we are not being true to our word, and we want to be sure to keep the kids safe. So that's one reason. And then the other reason is really to make sure that the visitors feel welcomed. I know it can be tempting to let, you know, one of your friends into the classroom. You know them, you trust them, you love them. But there might be a little bit more resistance to a stranger, a guest coming into the classroom. And so that there isn't this divide, we want to make sure that no parents are entering into the classroom so that everyone can feel welcome and everyone can feel like their kids are safe. So that's the first reminder. Second reminder, we use the code system. I know most of you are pretty familiar with this. I know, again, it's something that can feel a little silly. Like, if Andy comes to pick up her kid, I know it's Elisha or Judah. But not everybody's going to know that. We're not going to know guests. And some new members might not be familiar with everybody yet. So we want to make sure, quite honestly, that we're returning the correct child to the correct parent. And so that's what this code system is for. So all the kids will have at check-in, they'll get a sticker that you put on their back with the family code. And then the parent will get a matching sticker with the code on their sticker. And so that's the check-in part. And then at pickup, just so that, again, parents feel welcome and they're also not coming into the classroom, one of the volunteers will stand at the door. The other volunteer will stay with the kids, of course. And a child is officially checked out when you take their sticker off of the back of their shirt. And then if you do not know the parent or child, just make sure that the codes are the same. And then give the code back to the parent because they might have some more kids to pick up. So that is kind of the safety and the thinking behind the code system, even when sometimes it seems might seem a little silly to check Andy's code, but it's important to have for visitors and for new members. Also, if you're in lower or upper elementary, there's a chance that you might have a kid who was not checked in come into your classroom since they're leaving from the auditorium. If that's the case, just tell your floater, who will tell me, or tell me directly. And I will be sure to meet the parents at pickup to make sure we have their information and to kind of tell them about the check-in system and that kind of thing so that they feel comfortable and they can know for next time if they come to visit. We've changed just a couple things with the bathroom policy. We're continuing to ask the parents to take their kids to the bathroom before they are checked into Restoration Kids. So this should only be in the case of an emergency. This shouldn't be a prevalent thing that's happening. But if a kid does need to go to the bathroom during Restoration Kids, if they're in the 0-2 or the 3-5 room, we're tweaking this a little bit so that the floater will just directly go and get a parent. We're doing this because some of the kids are potty training or are recently potty trained, and they require a little more help than our volunteers should be giving them in the bathroom. And so I know that there's a mix in the 3-5 rooms. Some need more help, some need less help. But just for clarity and consistency and for safety, we're asking that the floater will just go directly and get a parent in one of those two rooms. If you're in the lower or upper elementary, you'll still get the floater, but the floater will take that child and one other child to the women's restroom. She will go ahead and make sure that there's no one in the bathroom, and then the child can use the bathroom, and she will stand outside in the hallway and just give that child, make sure that no one else is, you know, coming into the bathroom or anything like that. And then if that second child who came with them does not need to go to the bathroom, he or she can stand in the public hallway with the floater. And then just making sure that any kid who goes to the bathroom washes their hands before they come back to class. So that...
Related to that, you want to go over...
Yes, so we're actually going to not go to the bathroom at all on the way from lower and upper because, again, a lot of them, they should have gone to the bathroom right before, so it's maybe been 30 minutes or maybe 45. But for the most part, they don't really have to go, and it causes this loud commotion. And also, that's when a lot of women go to the bathroom before the sermon starts. And so for safety, we don't want a bunch of people who haven't had a background check in the bathroom with the kids. So we're just going to say that you go straight to your classroom. That's a good question. Okay, last thing for me is scheduling. I am new. I do not know what your preferences are. I don't know where you like to serve or how you like to serve, whether you like to be a lead or assistant, that kind of thing. So I'm going to pass out at the end just a little two-question survey. You can tell me what your preferences are or if you don't have a preference, just so that I know. But that said, so I want to know those things so that you can thrive where you want to teach. But I will say that it might be that every single person wants to do lower elementary. And in that case, I might not be able to always put you in your preferred classroom, depending on the schedule and who's available. But I do want to know, and I will try to make it happen if you can. And then last reminder, once I send out the calendar of who is scheduled where, It's your responsibility to put it in your calendar, and it's your responsibility to find a replacement if you can no longer serve that week. And we are a little low on volunteers, so try to do this in advance, just so that you can have more options for switching. And also you can use the schedule as well as the church directory to be able to ask people if they can switch. And do try to be careful. If you're looking at the calendar and you see someone has served either the week before you or the week after you, try not to ask them to serve so that they don't have to be put in that position of whether or not to say yes, because we want people to be in corporate worship as much as possible. So those are the policy changes, but there's a lot more in that policy document, so please be sure to read it. So Andy's going to come chat with us about classroom management.
Not standing in front of all of you guys. Before, Catherine asked me to talk about classroom management, just some things that I do to help manage the chaos sometimes, because we are dealing with kids. But I wanted to step back just a second and say, as a parent and as a church member and as a child who came, or as an adult who came to faith as a child, what you do matters. It's huge. And I want you to hear me say thank you. Thank you for doing it. I came to faith when I was 7 in a church plant in a double-wide trailer that was used as a real estate agency. And my classroom was next to a huge desk about the size of this middle area. And I remember that because it was important, because people were teaching me how to learn about Jesus and how to grow in Jesus. And so even though we're in a high school and our classrooms are kind of funny sometimes and we have to work around pianos and computers and other things, the Lord uses it, and I'm thankful. I'm very thankful. So thank you. So now I'll talk about classroom management a little bit. Not the best manager, but we'll give it a shot. First of all, I would say you guys have to be prepared. And I know that Catherine touched on it a little bit before, but it's so important that your heart is prepared to come in and talk, that you're prepared to come in and hold crying babies, that you're prepared to come in and deal with wiggly kids or kids that want to be chattery, or that you're just prepared to kind of go with the flow that morning. I say be prepared, like really take the time during the week to study what Catherine sends us. It's all there. It's such a great opportunity. I know that I think I was talking to Liz briefly last week, and she and I were talking about how we actually learn a lot having to teach, you know. So use this time. This is, instead of sitting in the sermon, you're the preacher, kind of, in that class. So come prepared. Have your heart prepared. So pray it up. Pray for the kids that you're going to be with. Pray for the other teachers. Pray for the opportunities. Because I would say, just like when we go into the auditorium this morning, we're all going to go in expecting that Nathan studied this week and that he has something to say. And we're expecting the musicians to have practiced their music, right? So we show up with an expectation. Unfortunately, not all our children are eager and driving their own cars to get here, but there is an expectation that they're going to learn something about Jesus. And the great thing is that God has given you this really great opportunity to teach these kids something about Him. And so out of respect for God and out of respect for the kids that are coming, just take a little bit of time and be prepared. When they know that they have your attention, and your attention is not in that folder, they're gonna pay attention, and it will manage the class a little bit more. It'll give you the flexibility to kind of move when you need to move and redirect when you need to redirect. So it helps you be engaged. It helps you to have a great attitude, because even our 0 to 2s, sometimes, to be honest, we have to pray ourselves up, because that can be a tough crowd. But it is just like we give attention to people who have prepared for us, kids will give you attention too. So give them the attention that I know that you guys want to give them. The second thing is like Kyle, I think Kyle said it a little bit earlier, is that you guys are so great with our kids. You're in our homes, they're with you, you babysit, you wrestle, you color, you play games. But sometimes it's hard for kids to redirect that energy into a new way. So what I'm saying is, I'm going to use New Style as an example because he's so great at wrestling with my boys. So Saturday night, New Style's at our house, and he's in the floor, he's wrestling, Alex is in there in the mix because we can't leave her out. They're in there, we're having a great time. Well, on Sunday morning, teaching my kids, sometimes it's hard for kids to make that transition that Misael is not my wrestle buddy anymore, he's my teacher. And so there's a couple of ways that you can help establish authority in the classroom without it being a big deal, but to help the kids transition and give you the respect and the attention that you need. So I do this with our 3 to 5-year-olds. We kind of go around and ask them what their names are. So we'll say, what's your name again? Oh, it's Cinderella. No, it's Miss Catherine. And we go around, and then I'll introduce myself and the helper. And then we take a few seconds and say, now, I'm Miss Sandy, and I have been given a really big job. And my job is to teach you about God today. But you've been given a really big job, too, and your job is to learn about God. Now, can we do that without each other? No. We need each other to do that. And so I kind of give them responsibility, and I give myself responsibility, but I establish who's the teacher and who's the student. And then in our 3 to 5s, then we go through a silly thing, kind of like, and so in order to be a really good learner and do a great job today, we need eyes that are watching, ears that are listening, mouths that are quiet, and hands that we keep to ourselves. And so we kind of establish that. Now you can do that with the older kids and just remind them, like, don't hit your friend and don't spit on people or talk when I'm talking or make sure you're listening. So you can do different things, but it is good to kind of figure out the thing that you do to reestablish, like, I know we had a really good time playing last night, but today we've got an important job to do, and that important job is to learn about Jesus. So, and then, also when I'm establishing authority, I always make sure that when we pray that I am a good teacher and that they are good learners. And so it helps to kind of change their hearts and get their hearts in the right place to learn the important thing that you have to teach them. But then the third thing that I wanted to share is that there are days that we are on the struggle bus. Like, we're struggling. We're struggling as teachers because we can't get their attention. They're struggling being still. I mean, for heaven's sakes, they've got tons of energy and tons of life, and that's part of the reason we love kids. However, sometimes we can all struggle. But if you are prepared and you know what you're talking about, it's easier to switch over instead of having to figure out in your book what you're doing, and then come over here and redirect. If you know what you're doing, you can kind of in your head figure out, like, we need to not sit for story, writing, whatever else we're doing sitting still. We need to stand up and move because they can't sit still. Or they're all really chatty. So instead of going straight into the story, I'm going to ask them a lot of stories about what they expect the story to be about so that they can talk. Or different things like that, to refocus, to move with the class. Because these kids are kids, they're people, and just like every once in a while, I'll lean over and whisper something during a sermon or poke my friend, they're going to do the same thing too. They're going to wiggle, something's going to catch their attention, and we want them to have space to do that because that's how they grow, that's how they stay engaged, and that's how they learn. But if you're really struggling and the refocusing doesn't work, my favorite is everybody just has to stop and stand up and jump or run back and forth between the room or just move. And I'll just call it out. Like, we're struggling. We need to get up and move. Let's do it. And then we come back and everybody sits down. Sometimes if that doesn't work, then it's really good to remind them of the rules. There are several times in the 3 to 5-year-old class that I'll be like, everybody's eyes are not watching me, or everybody's ears are not listening. Let's work on that. And then sometimes we just have to call everybody to Jesus and stop and pray. Like, just pray that everybody can get refocused. And sometimes it's good just to call it out. But I would say that those are my only tips for managing classrooms. It is controlled chaos, and that's why it's so important that we work on safety. But I would definitely say what you do matters. The more you are paying attention to them, the more they will pay attention to you. And they're learning to know Jesus. They're learning how to study Jesus. They're being discipled. They are watching people teach them how to do those things. And so it matters. It really matters. So thank you for serving. And now I'm going to go sit down or go play with paper airplanes.
Okay. All right. So I get to talk with you guys about how to take the curriculum that Catherine has already shared a little bit about and make it a little more engaging, make it a little bit more. And it's not, I think, like kind of be like overwhelming thing, like, how am I going to make this a little bit more? It just only takes a few extra minutes of just being prepared and kind of thinking through it. So I'm going to give you suggestions today. Again, they are just suggestions, and you guys can take it or leave it however you choose in planning and to disciple the kids in Restoration Church. So when I know that I'm going to be discipling the kids in Restoration Church, I print out the lesson plans that Catherine sends us, and I glance through them. I look through it, look through all the object lessons. I read the story, and then I sit back and I look through it and I decide which object lesson do I want to go first. Because they give you this neat little order, and sometimes I follow the order, but sometimes it might be best for me to take the bonus lesson and bump it and put it maybe at the very beginning, because I'm going to start off and this is how we're going to talk, like to get it going for the discussion. So, for instance, the other week, Joey and I were in the 3 to 5 year old class. And the bonus lesson was an opportunity for them to act like spies. And we did not want to, like, miss out on them getting an opportunity to do that. So we read the story, and we realized, okay, they've been sitting for a little bit. This is a great opportunity for them to be able to put into action what we just read about. So we created the scene in the back, and all the stuff, I mean, it was printed out. The pictures Catherine had already printed out from the object lesson. We printed out a few more just to kind of create a little bit more. And then right after the lesson, or right after the story, we started to act like spies, and we were going into the Promised Land, like checking out the area and scoping it. Now, when I say we, Joey and I, we were spies as well. Like, it was not just the kids. We were on the floor, crawling, going up underneath the tables, everything. They love it when you are engaged with them and you're doing it with them. So that is just an idea of how, when looking at the object lessons, switching it around, there's total freedom in that. If you want to just stay and follow the way that they have it mapped out, there's nothing wrong with that. But if you decide you want to kind of move them around, still doing all of the lessons. So I'm still, and they're there for a reason, and it takes about an hour and something for it. So we usually don't omit too many. Like, most of the time, you're doing all of the object lessons. But shift them around to what works best for you in being able to teach the kids. Now, we also want to, like, think about how can we engage them on each level. So, right, we have the pre-K group, we have the 3 to 5 year olds. What might work for them? It's going to look maybe a little bit different. Sometimes not so much, but maybe a little bit different for the lower elementary. And then the upper elementary, it's going to look different just based on their ages. And so for the 3 to 5 year olds, the pre-K class, again, we were just in there the other day, and y'all, they love the puppet. Have any of y'all, raise your hand if you've ever used the puppet. Do you even know that we have a puppet? Yeah, now it is a very sad looking puppet. It is, they love it. I mean, it's pretty sad that the eyeball's missing off of it, and they still love this puppet. It's crazy. But, and we might be getting a new one. I'm not sure though, because I'm afraid it might stir up some. They like it a lot. So, but pull out that puppet. Like, I pulled it out when we were going over what Andy had just discussed
about going over the classroom rules for the 3 to 5 year olds. And I just played like the puppet, had no clue, was brand new to the classroom, and was like, what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to talk when the teacher's talking? And they're like, no, you know, and just engaging and use like silly voices while you're doing the puppet. They love it. I mean, they really, really love it. Or use the puppet at the end of the story to then go back and ask questions to them. So any way that you can maybe incorporate that puppet in, it's kind of, they really enjoy it. So that's just an extra tip just to possibly use. Another thing is movement. Oh, let them be engaged and move. They need to be able to move or make sounds. So as you're reading through the story, look through it and see where's anywhere I can insert where they're like stomping their feet so it sounds like horses trampling through, or clapping their hands so it sounds like a thunderstorm or lightning. The other day we were doing, again, the spies on the spies, and the 10 spies had come back to report that they were saying, man, we're kind of like grasshoppers compared to these people here. So let them get up and hop around and act like grasshoppers. I mean, it sounds really simple and it's kind of silly, but they like that, and that helps them. It kind of allows the story to stick with them a little bit more. Or even with the spy story, there was 12 spies. So then we paused and we're like, let everyone count to 12. We're going to count to 12 right now. And so just letting them kind of be a part of the story. There's nothing wrong with reading the story to them. There's nothing wrong with that. But it is helpful if you already know the story, and it's more like you are just kind of telling the story to them and letting them be a part of it. Shaking out the wiggles, you can do it in the story, or what I always do when I start, we shake out wiggles before we even start. Like when we get done cleaning up, we shake out some wiggles at the beginning. So take that memory verse that you have and like the music and the songs, like let them dance for a few minutes and shake out wiggles, or do stretches or anything just to get them kind of moving for a few minutes before then they're going to have to sit down and be engaged to kind of listen for a little bit. Also, I mean, I already shared this, just do it with them. I mean, be like, if you're going to role play, you're going to do it with them, dress up, they really do enjoy that. For the lower elementary, they're going to like all these, pretty much these same things. I don't think they have a puppet for the lower elementary, but that's okay. What'd you say? They would, I know, I think that they maybe would. So that's something to keep in mind for us to maybe, yeah, incorporate a puppet with that. But with that role playing, so Amy Bergener has made costumes for, so if you want to let them dress up and role play, do it. Let them, they really like it when they're given a role and they're allowed, so you could read the story, you could do it, and then you say, okay, now it's your turn, you're going to act it out. You're going to get a chance to be this person, you're going to get a chance to be this person, and let them, and then that helps them even retain the information even more because they're getting an opportunity to really act it out. Also, something that Joey and I had done a couple months ago is when we were telling the story, we said, you know, it would be a fun way for them. It was a lot of information in the story, and we wanted them to be a part of it. So we printed out images and pictures, and it literally like took us 5 minutes just to print them out. And then we took some white butcher paper, and we just ran it across the mirrored wall right here. And then we told them, we said, okay, during the story, we're going to have different parts where we're going to need your help. And so they would actually, like, we story mapped the story. So, like, each part, they were coming up and putting different pieces up on the board to tell from the beginning of the story to the end of the story. And then it was really, really helpful at the very end because then they had a visual cue and aid to look at as we were reviewing and talking through, oh, wait, what happened? When was it? Oh, okay, what happened next? And then just talking them through it. And then they got an active role to actually put something up on the board, which they really enjoyed in that. Another thing is Joey and I, same time we were in here doing that lesson, we were talking about the Israelites, and we were talking about their grumbling. And we shared with, you know, asked the kids, what does grumbling mean? And so they went through that and said, okay, today is going to be your opportunity because you have got to listen out. And if you hear any grumbling today, guess what you have to do? You have to come up, and we're going to put tally marks on this dry erase board. And we're going to see how many tally marks we get at the very end. And we're going to see. Well, don't you know, the whole story was on grumbling. A whole entire board was filled with tally marks that they loved. They're like, oh, you just grumbled. Oh, you know, and like they would go up and they would put, or, and then they'd catch themselves, oh, I just grumbled. You know, and they were going, or in the story, there was, you know, a lot of grumbling going on. And so it's just an active way for that lesson to be used. Dry erase board, the marker, but they loved it. They really, really loved it.
And then it helped at the very end tie it all together, because then we could count up how many tally marks were there and then be like, see, you know, a lot of grumbling going on. How do we do this in our own heart? How are we doing this every day? For the upper elementary, with them, I would say a lot of times it's talking, and Andy and I, we were chatting about this, but talking with them, like sitting at the table with them. And I've actually only been in that classroom a couple times. I know, Ryan, you've been in there a handful of times, so I know you probably have some great pointers and tips on what to do in there. But sitting with them at the table and discussing it with them, not talking to them so much, but it's actually like you're carrying a conversation on with them. They're at a point now where they're reading out loud. So one of the things that you can do is you can pair them up. You can group them up in twos and say, okay, you guys are going to get the first paragraph. You guys are going to get the second paragraph. You guys are going to get the third paragraph. Then we're going to come back together. We're going to read it all together. Then my first paragraph, they're going to paraphrase. They're going to tell us what is it talking about. And then again, it's giving them an opportunity to kind of teach the rest of the group about it. Another thing for them is their writing. And so, like for the memory verses, a lot of times we play it, we'll shake out Wiggles, we'll still dance in that little computer room, we'll do it. But then I'll let them lay out the butcher paper and let them actually write out the memory verse, and they enjoy that. Like, so giving them each a part of it. Or you can even do like popcorn where part of them say, okay, you're gonna be the first word, then you're the next word, just to practice doing the memory verse. And so with the memory verse, guys, you don't have to you can play it. I play it a lot of times, like as they're coming in, I just have that memory verse music kind of playing as they, that's more for the 3 to 5 year olds because they're coming into the room. It's a little bit different when we come from the sanctuary in, but, use it throughout, like let them do freeze dance to it. Turn it on and just have it playing while they're coloring. It's just a good way to continue to have it kind of embedded in them and stuff. And one other thing that can be used too is sometimes even just the mystery of like when you're telling the story, like putting stuff in a bag, a brown paper bag, but putting stuff in there and like pulling it out, like whether it's pictures or different things that are going to be able to retell the story, or even writing the memory verse. You could take the memory verse and write it out on a piece of paper and then cut it up, and they have to sit on the floor and build it together to create the memory verse. So they're just small techniques and tips to kind of use, but again, it's taking the curriculum that we've already been given, which is great, by the way. I mean, it really is. As a former teacher, I feel like it's very well just thought through and laid out, and it's simple to follow, but taking it maybe just to that one next level for them, just to make it a little bit more exciting and engaging for them. So that is all I have.
Great.
So now it's question time.
Yeah, so we can ask a few questions. I also wanted to mention, hopefully you guys thought those tips were really helpful. I thought they were. And if you want to do some of these bonus object lessons or these other things and you need some supplies, let me know. You might have it, or I might be able to get it for you, that kind of thing. I'll always have the 2 regular object lesson supplies ready for you. But if you want to do the bonus object, just let me know so that I can prepare that for you. So we can ask questions now. We have a few more minutes. I did also want to pass out the surveys. So let's go ahead and get, I didn't bring pens. Hopefully some of the ladies have pens in their purses and can share. But yeah, you have a question? Yeah.
So I was reading through here in the back where it says many children in volunteer assessment who wins their suspect and what to do unless they interpret what their concerns immediately so we are both. And I know that, we've had churches in there who believe the same gospel, who developed this curriculum that we do in the same denomination, and they've not done a good job based on having to adjust reports to leaders in ministry. Should there be responsibility to volunteers not just report to a leader, but also go to authority, because leaders don't always do their job anymore in an area?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would need to probably talk to a leader to see if I will, let me check with Joey on that one and see what he thinks, just in terms of how we can approach that biblically and in a wise way. Because you're right, there have been some other churches in the area that.
Yeah, it could potentially open us, I'm not more than an engine policy like this could open us up to liability.
Yeah, that's a good, I'll look into that. Thank you. Yeah, hey.
So not so much a question, but this is very helpful. I hear what Kate and Annie had to say. Like I'm always the lead teacher in the upper class.
Yeah.
Like I never see another person teach or like be able to glean anything from like a different way of doing.
Yeah.
So I always just encourage us to like talk to each other. Like I always try and ask an assistant like so like how do other people do this?
Yeah. They're
working with other people. I just encourage us to like share things like hey, you can share with us. Like across the board, this is very helpful. And I, as always being a lead teacher, I've never seen anyone else doing it differently.
Yeah.
So, or encourage things that you see someone doing really well, and you've never seen them that way. That would be awesome if you doing that way. So, that would be feedback.
Yeah,
because
I had never served with you, and I haven't got an opportunity because usually I'm the lead teacher. And so, it's when you see me to meet with the upper elementary. And he jots down that chart every school. He has his outline of like what he's been doing, like what he's going to hit, which is really helpful. And let me know as he kind of able to talk to you. Okay, we're going to do this first, and then this young to recap like what they were learning before they said talk about that before they move into their next lesson. But yes, I totally agree. If you're a teacher, you don't get an opportunity to necessarily be up here watching someone else lead. So we don't share.
Yeah. Especially the assistants, like, Kate, like, that was really good. I really went off that Kate got to love you sort of what's next week. Even if it's from the lower elementary, I share that with the teacher serving
that. And I'll type up these things and make sure to send it out to you guys next week in case you didn't have a chance to take notes and were wondering, what was that one thing that Paige said that was really great that I want to do? Yeah. That you want to do, or I have this really great idea and suggest it to them. There's certainly not an expectation to be the lead teacher to be rescue over, but I think it's helpful also when you kind of designate roles. So if like when Hector and I are doing teaching together, I might be reading because you know I might be reading, and then Hector's making sure that he's sitting on the blanket and this person is rolling over and he's gonna tell them. So that's like not necessarily preparing in that way, but you are helping with this classroom management piece. And then the lead can, I think, just tell me what can I do to help, you know, that kind of thing. But there is no expectation to be able to pull you up and do it. Is that helpful?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have two things. For me, those chairs in the upper elementary have not worked.
Okay.
Last time we had two kids, so that was not. I push those chairs mm-hmm. right away because at that age group, they want to swivel in the chairs. They're not focused on the lesson. And last time with Michelle, we used the floor, and it was so much better.
That's a good tip. Just yeah.
Gonna...
Yeah. Yeah. We have some of that problem in here, too. They'll slide. Whoa, we don't slide in here. You know.
The other thing is upper and lower elementary mm-hmm. are more than capable to walk without that rope. And they don't think they're giving them enough credit.
Mm-hmm.
They're more than capable to follow you in a straight line of that age group.
Yeah. Okay. That's so, good. Yeah, that's a good suggestion.
That's my two.
Yeah, thank you.
Two things. Yeah.
Any other questions or suggestions? before we break, and those who are serving Restoration Kids can go prepare for their classes.
Yeah.
One thing I would say, when we brought up about the passage in either the book or the Bible, I think it's good to think ahead and make sure you contemplate how you're going to actually work through the passage, because some weeks it's better to do it from the Bible. It's just a passage that's pretty clear. Other weeks the story is probably better. Sometimes it's a mix of both. Sometimes there's other references in the Bible you can pull in, but I think that's a big part of it. And especially if it's long, it's really important to make sure that you're kind of prepared to be able to go through it in a good way. And then as you're going through it, one thing it's easier to just sit there and read it, or even if you're having them read it, just keep going. But I think you have to stop like 3, 5, 10 times to make sure they're all getting it. Usually you can tell. Mm-hmm. So almost like going through the reading is how I at least kind of do the lesson, because, you read a chunk and then you talk it through. And then you get to the end and then you make sure that hopefully they have kind of the whole arc and the whole story.
Yeah.
But depending on what you're reading, it matters how you're going to go through that. And that's kind of key.
Particularly for the upper elementary.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so in upper elementary, we print out the scripture for them, and they can mark it up and write on it and that kind of thing, and they use the scripture instead of the storybook Bible. Yeah.
Also, yes, another suggestion is educating the kids. You're going to get a lot, especially lately, we've gotten a lot of different visitors at different age, different classrooms. So our kids, like Cynthia said, they love to be with each other, and they know each other. So it's really encouraging to, hey, Nolan, can you say hi to so-and-so? He's new. Can you go play with him? And if you encourage the kids to do that, they will do it. If you don't, they won't do it. They will stay with their friends. And if they don't, that's fine, but you're giving them the opportunity to do it. And also at the end of the lesson, before the parents get them, after the cleanup, just kind of like sit them down or thank them for listening, for being good students, just kind of like helping them to carry that week after week. So.
Interview. Yeah.
I think definitely asking the hard questions is good, but I might turn it over to Ryan, actually. I know that you're a pro and you're a dad, so maybe helping them think through how do you ask the hard questions, but also not kind of trample on the parents' role in terms of helping the kids go that step further.
Sure, and I'm sure Cynthia has thoughts too. I mean, as a parent, I have no problem with you asking those questions or getting into that. A lot of times, at least with my daughters, they maybe are more open in certain ways with other people because they behave differently. That said, my oldest daughter, she can say all the right things, but it doesn't mean that she actually understands it. You see that day to day. And it's the same thing that we encounter with Christians on the street. Like, there are a lot of people in our country who culturally know exactly what it means to be a Christian. And they can say the words. But then, if you catch them in the right way, essentially what they're saying, well, how do you get to heaven? Well, if I'm a good person and I do the right things. That's essentially what they actually mean a lot of times with when they respond. And that's exactly how it is with my daughters. Like, And it's a God thing. Like, we have to wait for God to move, because there's something that clicks with people in understanding the fact that there's no way you can earn your way to heaven. Like, grace has to be involved. And in as much as a Sunday school teacher might be able to help a child make that mental pivot, I'm all for that outside assistance. I mean, obviously it's something we work on a lot. I don't know if that's helpful, but I don't think it hurts at all to have conversations like that that are very deep. And sometimes it naturally pivots that way.
I don't know if Andy or Cynthia have anything to add as far as having some of the upper kids.
I amen what he said.
Go for it. Ask for the heart.
I think it can be, the kids might feel pressure to say the right answer.
That's right.
And so for me, right. And you don't want them to think that they are a Christian because they keep saying this when they don't really know. And so it's just allowing for that ambiguity, I think, is important. But also, I would say, so what difference does it make if you believe this? So how would you live it out? What difference does it make that? So I can trust God if I'm afraid of the dark
What am I afraid of? How can I trust God for that? You know, so it's like, how do you live it out? Right? What difference does it make? How do you show love to your friends or to people who don't know God? And so,
the other thing to be aware
just the implications of what it might mean.
The other thing to be aware of is that in most of the kids' case, they are surrounded by non-Christians the entire rest of the time of their week. And so this is very, very foreign to anybody else in their life. And so it's very hard for them to, again, I'm talking about my daughters, and I don't know how it is for Caleb and Abby, but like, it's hard to kind of balance that, like feeling like this is the right answer here in this building, and then outside, you know, in the school setting, like, you can't talk about it. And so that's something that is also just good to be aware of.
I think if you have more questions, I'll stick around for a little bit, try to answer them, but if you can pass your surveys this way. Thank you guys so much for being here. Hopefully this is helpful. And thank you again for the important work that you're doing, teaching our kids about Christ. So thank you guys.